Hello, this is Robert Smigel with Europe's Podcast, where we talk to the entrepreneurs who are making it happen here in Bergen, Norway. Now get ready for an inspiring conversation with Stefan Glovne. Stefan is the co-founder and VP of Global Operations in Nordic AI AS and co-founder and chief operating officer in Com2.ai AS. Running the operations of both service and product-oriented AI businesses over the last 2 years have taught Stefan both the best and worst sides of AI and the lessons of how to use it and implement it effectively. He's passionate about responsible AI implementation and applies this passion to all his work, from workshops and webinars in responsible AI usage to iterative work on safer AI for mental health in Com2.ai. Stefan, thank you for coming on the show today and sharing your journey with all our listeners.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so we know about your, obviously in AI, you've got quite an extensive experience and background on that. You're CEO. Tell us a little bit more about yourself and your current business. You're from Bergen, Norway, which is fabulous. I've been seeing that. It's a beautiful place. So give us some, you're from there, born and raised. Give us some background.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I'm born and raised in Bergen, Norway. I've lived there most of my life, except for a little chapter living in Spain. So it's been almost it's been about 2 years now since I registered my first company as a solo consultant first, after I'd figured out that AI had a great potential within business after a little bit of work experience in more of a corporate setting in an energy company after doing my master's degree in accounting and auditing at the Norwegian School of Economics.
Okay, good. So what inspired you or motivated you to be an entrepreneur?
There are several things that motivated me. I definitely can't say that it was like that the finances weren't a part of the picture, but I definitely can't say that it was the only reason either. It definitely was an aspect of self-development that was part of the picture, that I saw the potential of using more of my capacity, using more of my abilities on a grander scheme of things, that I could do more for more businesses, have more impact and influence for people, use my knowledge and competence within AI for something greater. And also, of course, saw the financial possibilities. I saw that and understood that if I had stayed with a regular 9-to-5 job, that yes, sure, I could probably have gotten a fairly decent salary, but when it came to growth year by year and so on, the potential for growth would be much less than when running my own company, is essentially where the ceiling, so to speak, is unlimited, or where there aren't such a ceiling. And I was especially concerned following the corona period, seeing high inflation and so on, and being worried that the kind of the purchasing power will decrease over time, despite increases in salary as well. So some of these kind of trends there, I saw as like both with my self-development and for the kind of financial freedom, essentially, were part of the process in that regard for choosing to be an entrepreneur. And definitely a third aspect of it for sure was that I was willing to take the risk. I was willing to do something else that not a lot of other people would have done in my situation, taking the leap out of a secure job and having a good education at the basis and building upon that, but still choosing to take the unsecure road, but with a bit more chaos, but also more opportunity in that regard, that I had that kind of risk acceptance, in a sense, that I was willing to take some more risk with my life, essentially, both with my finances and with my career in that regard.
Okay, now did you need financing to start your company, and how does Nordic AI make money now?
It definitely required financing when I was first starting off as a solo entrepreneur in December 2023, when I was starting off at that time. In Norway, there is in order to start a limited liability company in Norway, you need at least 30,000 kroner, which is about 3,000 euros, as the baseline. And then, yeah, of course, you can add more money into the company by after that. What I used when starting off my first company was essentially using my savings from when I had taken the corporate job in the year previously, and building on my savings essentially when starting off, and then eventually using more and more of my savings accounts after I'd started that company. And I would say that most of the money I spent in the beginning, at least, was money spent in order to try to figure out how the game was run. Essentially, I was trying to figure everything out through mentors and other type of resources to learn more and more, as well as using other kind of suppliers when it came to marketing and sales and these matters. And a lot of these things weren't working in the beginning, but it was kind of the for me it was kind of the process to use money essentially to kind of figure out more and more about business, and eventually try to learn a lot more in that process, and eventually starting to get some contracts, get some assignments, get some revenue in that sense. So a lot of that process has been in a sense using money in order to learn, and then eventually building systems to kind of put things in place in that regard. So a lot of the challenge in the beginning was definitely kind of trying everything, in a sense, trying everything myself, trying to use money on other suppliers or or a lot of things that didn't work, before kind of figuring out how to do more and more of that game. So savings account, high risk loans, and then eventually building up to the point where we are now. We're used a lot of our own money, taking a lot of loans and so on, and eventually got some revenues from customer projects and so on, that we financed a lot of the operations. And especially when we got to the point of building Companion and building this kind of SaaS application, which of course is an internal project that has a lot of software development costs that aren't kind of covered by itself by like a customer revenue for customer-oriented projects, then of course we have to take risks, or we've had to take risks in that regard as well. So a lot of what has led us to come this far generally is that we've used a lot of taken a lot of sacrifices by using a lot of our own savings, taking a lot of loans and so on, and then eventually gotten revenue from projects from building on our competence and knowledge. And then eventually we've started to get some external investors, some dilutive funding as well. And now in Conto AI, the second company, we're now running our second financing round for building and scaling this up, as well as while we're working on getting that properly commercialized as its own kind of revenue generating entity.
Okay, good. So what's interesting is AI, you're in this industry and everyone's hearing a lot about this industry. What I find interesting about you is that you're kind of looking at both sides of the coin here. You're looking at the great things about AI, but also you're factoring in the worst case scenarios or the issues with AI, and we don't see that a lot. So what one piece of knowledge, I guess, about your industry that the common person may not know about, because not everyone's an expert, right? There's a lot of people outside the sphere of AI, the common person. If they were listening to this interview, what are some of the things that you would tell them that may be scared of it? Maybe like, what is this? Am I going to lose my job? Am I going to, is this a good thing or is it a bad thing? Give us the a bit of knowledge about this industry from your perspective.
What I think is important is finding a reasonably balanced approach to AI, which I'm trying to educate about, because I think a lot of people either have have a kind of either or view about AI. Like either it's like going to change the world, everything is good about AI, or people are very scared of it and don't really understand it and mainly see the negative sides of it. What I'm trying to say essentially is that yes, AI has a lot of potential, but it's also important to know that it has risks and there are a lot of challenges to navigate when implementing AI because it has consequences in practice, especially when we're using it within business. We can't just implement something without really understanding what we're doing. And I think that it's important to learn from the mistakes or the things that happened during the dot-com development as well, when the internet was in the beginning stages in the early 2000s. What happened ultimately at that time was that there were a lot of initiatives when it came to internet development. A lot of companies were just setting up their own websites, essentially having just websites without any employees, and they were getting massive funding, essentially without it having a real basis, right? And a lot of the reason for that was that people really didn't understand the technology that was behind it. And of course, the internet had massive potential as we know now today, but it wasn't so well understood at that time to have that kind of balance between both the potential, but also that, okay, it needs to be done in the right way. It isn't by itself that just because internet is going to be actually effective and work really well. And it's the same thing now, I think, with AI, that it's not because of like you say AI that is going to be good. It's because you're using the potential in the technology, but you're also navigating the risks and complexities that ultimately it is just technology. It is a statistical model essentially, and that it has a lot of great potential because the technology has come really far with essentially simulating and modeling the human brain and the neocortex that we as humans are using to kind of navigate patterns and understand the world at large and kind of brainstorm and come up with new ideas from there, right? That's how this new AI essentially is working, these LLMs are working essentially, is that within technology and within code, it has essentially been simulating the neocortex and the human brain to similarly do that through code. And because it has come that far, it has a lot of potential to do good and to be really effective, because it's essentially a new frontier of kind of thinking and human development when we can use these as tools for creativity and for us part of the evolution in how we work and how we operate as a society. But at the same time, it doesn't have the AI itself, it doesn't have values by itself, it doesn't have a basis of verification of truth, of truth or fact checking, or kind of social dynamics in a sense. A lot of these things that are considered obvious in human conversations, it isn't really obvious for an AI or a computer program in that sense. And I think that's the main thing that should be considered by people when trying to understand or navigate using AI in practice.
Okay, good. So let's talk a little bit about Bergen, Norway, and what that looks like. What does the entrepreneur environment look like in Bergen, Norway? Are there many meetups, networking events, conferences, places for you to connect? Give us the kind of the atmosphere, the environment of doing business in Bergen, Norway. What's that look like?
There are quite a few conferences and meetup places in Bergen. So at least the Bergen Chamber of Commerce or Bergens Næringsråd is arranging a lot of meetings and conferences for people to meet across startup founders, business professionals, investors, and so on, as well as other providers like the Sales and Marketing Association, are like mainly sales and marketing types of conferences, but it can also be general for kind of business professionals as well to just meet up there, doing some networking, and maybe build up business connections that eventually lead to sales or business deals in that regard as well. So I'm at a lot of conferences and meetups in Bergen across both business, investments, startup life, and technology in general. So a pretty varied scene of conferences as a possibility to network with people, especially considering that it's not the biggest town, but it has some good places to meet up with people.
Okay, good. So let's talk about the good, the bad, and what it looks like to do business in Bergen. What's the biggest benefit of you being an entrepreneur in Norway, Bergen, Norway? Can you share some of the good points about starting a business here, but also give us some of the challenges that you've had to come? I mean, you're from there, but maybe you know other entrepreneurs, and what's that look like for you, and how'd you overcome those challenges, and what's that look like today?
I think probably the main challenges I would say first are some of it is related to Norway specifically, and some are Bergen related, because when it comes to Norway in general, there's been kind of systematic challenges when from the political end, when it comes to a lot of investors having moved out of Norway. It's a very bad kind of political framework to invest and start up companies in Norway, unfortunately. But essentially, something that has been positive, of course, has been that in Bergen there are a lot of places to meet up, and that's essentially what I built on when I started my first company as well, and started trying to figure out how this game was working, that I went out to a lot of these conferences and meetups and so on. Like, two of the main kind of strategies I were using at that time was, like, one of it was going out at these conferences and meeting up with people, and secondary, kind of starting to use LinkedIn, like posting about what I was doing and getting in touch with people through like professional social media platforms like LinkedIn. And I knew that although there were kind of all these challenges and kind of essentially the stigma or kind of the cultural paradigm at that point, kind of on the as a result of the politics, that okay, like a lot of the ideology or thinking in Norway at this point, because of these kind of political developments, has been that you can't start and scale and succeed with a company or a startup company in Norway because of these kind of systematic challenges. But I wanted to try regardless, right? Regardless of these expectations and regardless of this basis in thinking, and that. Okay, if we get to the point where we succeed or scale, and that we need to move out ultimately, okay, we'll see what happens when we get to that point. But for now, let's just focus on the work at hand, continue building in Norway, and of course meet a lot of great people on the way.
Okay, if you were to start all over again, I want you to imagine that you're just moving to Bergen, or someone is an entrepreneur and they want to come to Bergen, Norway. Imagine they don't know anyone. What would you do to kickstart your business and get going again? Or if someone asked you, hey, I'm coming there, how do I start my business? What are some of the advice tips that you would give them to kind of knowing what you know, you've been there, you've walked through the good, bad, the ugly. What would you tell them? If they say, hey, I want to start a business and I want to get going in Bergen, in Norway, or in Norway. What would you tell them?
I would tell them that it is difficult to build an network from scratch, but the only way to go about it is to go through it. Like, I can understand that a lot, and I've talked with a lot of people who haven't come from Bergen or come in from Bergen, either from other places in Norway or from or as immigrants to Norway in that regard, and talking about the challenges of building a network in Norway and in Bergen. And personally, I would say that it is essentially the same for everyone. Unless you've had a good network from the start, everyone needs to do that. Essentially, I had to do that when I was starting off as well. Essentially, from like a new student or a new entrepreneur trying to build up a network in Norway, I didn't have that network through my family or through my network from before. It was something that I had to build up from scratch regarding going up to these meetups and the networking events and conferences and so on, which was really unnatural for me socially to begin with in the starting process, but that kind of have to learn to adapt to and get used to in the process. And that Yes, it's part of the game to talk with people, to get to know new people, and eventually just building these networks and connections one step at a time, because that's what ultimately business comes from. That it comes from relationships, and it comes from trust from those connections.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about your personal life. How do you balance work-life balance, being at home, and what are some of the things you would do in Bergen? I mean, your schedule must be pretty intense, working long hours, travel, things like that, but how do you kind of have create some work-life balance in Bergen, Norway, and what's that look like? What can you do there?
Yeah, a lot of the time it's challenging to maintain any kind of work-life balance, because I see that as a founder, it kind of becomes your life essentially to build a startup and to
And you
build
love
a
it
business.
too. You love the work,
But
so you want to.
absolutely, and like you find a way to kind of manage it in a sense. And like for me, when doing something other than just the business aspects, and even some of the other parts, like doing like exercising, going to the gym, for instance, like in some ways I consider those types of things as essentially a part of the business, because I know that, okay, physical health and mental health, that kind of all goes together with how I perform at both work and in my personal life in that matter. So I kind of consider them intertwined in that regard. And a lot of my reading as well, when I'm reading books and so on, that a lot of the time that's I when either that is technology related or psychology related or marketing related or business related or similar, like it's part of my work essentially. It's kind of done on my off time, so to speak, but still it's part of the work that I get more knowledge to understand how the game works to perform better in business as well.
Okay, so what does success look like for you? I mean, what are some of the things that I guess you consider to be you've hit certain parts of success? What is it that you would say I'll know when I get there? Or is it success the journey for you? What is it as far as, I mean, you're a very complex industry, so I mean it's never ending, but you personally, how do you measure success for yourself?
Yeah, what I've found essentially is that there is never a finish line you reach ultimately as an entrepreneur, and when going on this journey, there's always another goal, another mountain to climb. And in that sense, what I find really important is to kind of look at the small wins, and celebrate the small wins, and look at each milestone and setting these kind of steps on the way. And that when you're reaching great milestones, great achievements, of course celebrate those while you have the chance. Like none of us know really how long we have on this earth, how long time we have, and how many things we have can yet achieve. And especially among the ambitious of us, which I would say I am, I keep setting myself to higher standards and things that I want to achieve in that regard. But I also know that when I get there, I will set another goal that is 5 times as high as well. So success to me is definitely doing everything I can within my power to improve myself both in business and my personal life, but not sacrificing myself in the process, so to speak. That I'm staying true to my purpose is a very important part for me on that journey, and about pursuing success in that regard. That it's I don't get kind of delved into working without purpose. That I stay true to my purpose, remember my purpose, because there's always another step to an achievement to reach. But as long as you're ultimately working and following the journey that is true to your purpose, that at least makes the most out of the time you have.
Okay, so if you weren't doing what you do now, what would you like to do for a profession? Something that is totally separated from working for Nordic AI, if you were to do something that is kind of 180 away from that. Someone said, hey, you can't do this. What would you do? What kind of work would you like to do?
I think that there's a lot of things that I Technically could do, given the so many different roles I've had and kind of played in practice over the past 2 years as a founder and chief operating officer in that sense. Like I could probably take a lot of different types of roles in like CEO, COO, CFO, even CTO positions in that regard. Of course, I have my main academic background from my master's was in accounting and auditing. So of course I could have some basis within both within the auditing field. I could be an auditor technically speaking, or an accountant, but or an accountant or auditor based on the education that I have in that regard. But probably it would still be something with high pressure, because that's where I perform. I feel like probably if I wasn't a founder anymore and I was going over to a regular job in that sense. And if I still didn't have the kind of pressure I have now essentially, or I've felt and gotten used to over the past 2 years, then I would have probably gotten bored, I think, because it's kind of what I've adapted to. So I think probably I would pursue something that would still be high pressure in that regard, and still pursuing some kind of leadership position in that regard, which really challenged me
Excellent.
to perform in that regard.
How do you educate yourself? What books, do you have any books you could recommend or tools you use? Do you listen to podcasts, audiobooks? How do you learn and educate and stay up on top of everything?
So one of the books I recently finished was The Singularity Is Nearer by Ray Kurzweil, published in 2024. So one of probably the leading AI researcher on the field of artificial intelligence, who has worked on this, or who has studied AI for the last probably 20, 30 years, and has studied a lot of it. So that was a very interesting book about both the technology and the societal developments, and that's gone a lot into what I teach now when I'm holding guest lectures at universities or to businesses and so on. A lot of the things I've learned from the works of Ray Kurzweil in that regard, and other works, of course, on business books and so on. I'm reading one about traction right now, about marketing strategies, marketing tactics, and so on. And I'm also part of the program in a kind of incubator program in startups.com, where I'm taking a lot of courses about everything from marketing and traction. Like the traction book, for instance, it was referred to me by the startups.com program. And yeah, learning everything from investments, like fundraising, sales, marketing, and other matters through that. And also sometimes reading some political books as well. For instance, one by like a kind of social economist here in Norway, Martin Backholte, about called Landet som ble rikt, or the country that got too rich, about the Norwegian economy and Norwegian politics as well. So trying to pay a little bit of attention to the political development and history once in a while as well, but a lot of the time it's reading technology and business for sure. And then in addition to that, more recently I've started to kind of use these kind of apps to keep kind of my brain occupied as well, with like Elevate, for instance, learning a bit of practicing math, spelling, writing, speaking, memory, and so on. So li a little of these kind of brain games essentially, to keep myself up to speed on everything. And other apps like Brilliant to kind of get some kind of coding trick, or coding puzzles, or math puzzles once in a while. Those also keep me up to date, and helps with my education in the process.
Okay, good. So we're going to wrap things up. How can our listeners get hold of you? And is there anything you'd like to add before you leave us today? This could be any advice you've received, anything you want to get out there to tell the listeners, and who you want to talk to, anything like that?
Yeah, so the way to get a hold of me is at least on LinkedIn at Stefan Klevning. I'm very active on LinkedIn, also on email, stefan@nordicai.com. And yeah, for advice I would give generally is that probably retelling some advice from the American serial founder or serial entrepreneur Alex Hormozi about the different stages you go through on the founder journey, which I've experienced as well, is that when you start off in the process, it starts with uninformed optimism, essentially, that you don't really know what you're doing, but you're very excited about changing the world and everything is going to happen. When you're learning more about the game, essentially, you go over to informed pessimism. You understand more of the challenges, and then and that makes you more pessimistic whether this is actually going to work. But if you actually push through that instead of giving up at that stage, then eventually you're pulling through to informed optimism as well, because you understand not only the challenges, but you also understand enough about how to overcome and beat those challenges as well. So that's the advice I would give in that sense. And regarding what we need right now, of course, we love to talk about companion, what we're doing with AI in the mental health and wellness space. Of course, we're looking for more people to test out the platform at com2.ai, com2.ai. What we're looking for, more users, people to test out that. Looking for partnerships there, as well as for investors at the pre-seed stage who are interested in more of the kind of med tech or health tech field for applications such as this.
Okay, good. And they don't need to be an AI, obviously. You'll train them on if there's coming from the outside world and want to learn or get involved in some way. You'll take them to that level, I guess.
Of course.
Good. Okay, Stefan, thank you for coming on the show. I've learned a lot about you, and I'm sure our listeners have as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, take care.